Hi, you're with Truth News Radio on the 14th of December 2010. I'm Hereward Fenton. Well, folks, the last show we did was dedicated to the questions about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, who is still in jail in London. And I'm going to do another show today where we're going to discuss in depth questions and viewpoints about WikiLeaks with my guest today, Rochelle McCready. Rochelle's been on the show a couple of times before. She's from Oliveri Lawyers. She's a lawyer and a science graduate. And according to her own description, she's a geek, but not an uber geek. And I'd just like to say a very warm welcome to Rochelle McCready. Rochelle, are you there?
Yes. Hello, Hereward. Thank you. How are you today, Hereward?
I'm great. I've had a great week. It's been really intense. Just so much going on, so much to keep to keep track of going on in the world. And I'm just the sort of person who just these days just constantly vacuums up information.
Must be flat out.
Yeah. It gets quite exhausting, actually. Now, you as well, Rochelle, from my experience, are someone who vacuums up information at an incredible rate, and you've covered a lot of topics with us. You know, your main area of focus in your work is with mentally ill people in Sydney who you're actually trying to help. People have been damaged by medications and incorrect, I guess, directions from doctors and psychiatrists.
Yeah, that's true, Hereward. I mean, I do also practice criminal law, and I practice in other areas, some administrative law and so on. But it's true that I have campaigned quite actively. I'm unconditionally opposed to psychiatric abuse, but I don't have a problem with psychiatry if it's practiced properly. I mean, if psychiatrists
Indeed.
Practice psychiatry like the late Dr. Sidney Walker III, I wouldn't have a problem at all. And I wish more psychiatrists would read his book and work out what is actually medically wrong with these people instead of just labelling them and drugging them. Anyway, that's my bit about psychiatry.
Thanks for that. And we'll get on to discussing the current state of affairs in Australia in relation to psychiatry. But I'd like to start off with getting you to give us a roundup of your analysis of the debacle over WikiLeaks. I mean, it's interesting in the sense that WikiLeaks is dominating the news, virtually all the news still. I mean, yesterday, the Sydney Morning Herald, the top newspaper in Sydney, one of the top newspapers in the country, the entire front page was dedicated to information from the WikiLeaks cables.
Yes.
It's just fascinating.
I'm not surprised. The thing about WikiLeaks is there has been so much idiocy about the whole WikiLeaks issue. And as a lawyer, I feel obliged to point it out. Now, the essence of the matter is that the US government is purporting to exercise extraterritorial jurisdiction in respect to Mr. Assange by its threats of prosecution. Now, what needs to be borne in mind is that Julian Assange is not a US citizen. WikiLeaks is not a US organisation. It's not located on US soil. Mr. Assange's actions in publishing the documents were not carried out in the US, but even if they had been, it is not an offence to publish leaked documents. And the US Supreme Court ruled on that matter, and they ruled very clearly in relation to the Pentagon Papers. And it was held that it's not an offence for a media organisation to publish leaked documents. Now, there was absolutely no theft. People saying that Mr. Assange stole documents. Mr. Assange didn't steal anything, nor did Bradley Manning. I mean, stealing has a very technical definition in law. It has two elements, which is animus furandi, which is where there's an intention to permanently deprive the owner of the possession. And the other is asportation, which is the taking and carrying away of the item with the intention of permanently depriving the owner of the possession of the item.
Right.
Now, Bradley Manning did not steal any documents from the hard drives of the US government, nor did he take any hard copies of documents and take them away. What he did was he copied documents. And he gave them to Mr. Assange, who published them. Now, before people just come out with a knee-jerk response, well, you know, there's been a theft of intellectual property, I'd like to point out that these documents are not subject to copyright.
That's fascinating.
No, they're not subject to any international agreement. And it's very important that people understand that. Now, there have been all kinds of noises about how Mr. Assange has behaved in an illegal fashion. And there's been a lot of idiocy, both on the part of US politicians and also some of our own, claiming that he's done something illegal. And people have said things like, well, he's a traitor. Well, he can't be a traitor because he's not American.
Right.
And he's a terrorist. Well, it's not an act of terrorism. But the interesting thing is, with all these claims of illegality, we've got the House passing a bill to make his actions illegal. Well, if his actions were illegal already, why do they need to pass a bill to make them illegal?
Right, right.
And also, we've had the Australian government, not everybody in the Australian government, I'm very, very pleased to see that Kevin Rudd has been completely sensible about the whole thing. He said he's not going to cancel Mr. Assange's passport, and he's said that Mr. Assange hasn't done anything illegal and that's the fault of the US government for having lax security. And I'm very pleased to say, not a member of the government, but credit where credit is due, John Howard has also come out and said that Mr. Assange hasn't done anything illegal. But the people who said Mr. Assange has done something illegal are Julia Gillard and Robert McClellan. They've declined to specify what he's done. It's illegal. And we had Mr. McClellan saying it'll take the Australian Federal Police a year to work out whether Mr. Assange has done something illegal. Well, talk about a prior inconsistent statement. On the one hand, we say he's done something illegal, and then we say it'll take the Australian Federal Police a year to determine whether he's done anything illegal. Both can't be true.
Indeed. And yet, despite that, he's now in prison. Now, I know it's on an unrelated matter, but I find it just incredible that he's in prison at all, when in fact he's not even been charged with sex offences.
It is extraordinary. He's being detained only so that he can be questioned. And I mean, all of this is being done by the US government. But if anybody has behaved in a criminal fashion, it's the US government. Like Senator Lieberman stole the .org. I mean, pressure was put on eBay, the parent company, to stop PayPal accepting donations. I mean, pressure was applied to MasterCard, Visa card, and pressure was applied to the Swiss Post Office.
Right.
And pressure was applied to Amazon. Now, all of these things are just illegal.
Now, you know, something interesting that came up yesterday, the issue of his being extradited to Sweden and then possibly on to the US may actually be a bit of a decoy or a smokescreen, because it turns out that he's more likely to be extradited from the UK than Sweden.
Is that right?
Yeah, because the relationship between the UK and the US is much closer, and it's much more likely that he could get extradited straight from the UK to the US. So That I just think that's a very interesting point, because he is in prison in the UK, not in Sweden at present. And, of course, we don't know what's happened over the last week. We don't know what's really going on behind the scenes. We should be finding out probably – I mean, today it's Tuesday morning here in Sydney. It's Monday evening over there. I think that within the next 24 hours, we're going to get a much clearer indication of what's actually going to happen.
Yes, I've been a bit confused about that one. That's pretty much a wild card. I mean, I'm quite sure if Tony Blair was still in power, you know, he would have had his smiling face getting on television and saying, now, Mr. Assange has done something illegal, he's engaged in espionage, even though he would know perfectly well that's not true, and Mr. Assange would be deported before he could say lickety-split. But wondering what the present UK government is going to do, because, you know, they're a coalition and one
indeed
would hope that they'd be a bit more sensible about matters, but one never knows.
Now, have you had a chance to actually look at the sex charge allegations against him? I mean, I know it's kind of a very venal issue. It's hardly worth our time, but it is important in the sense that I think what we, when we see a travesty of justice and we see someone locked up, that has to be exposed.
Well, it does. I mean, I've seen all manner of contradictory things about the sex charges against Mr. Assange. I gave up hope of pretty much finding something accurate. I've seen so many different things. On one hand, it's claimed that he's been charged with rape. Well, he hasn't been charged with rape. I mean, the Swedish government has made it clear they just want to detain him for questioning. But it appears to relate to a condom that was broken. And both women have admitted having consensual intercourse with him. And Ms. Arden actually deleted tweets from her mobile phone about having intercourse with Mr. Assange and made it clear that it was, well, not so much relating to it, well, not directly relating to intercourse, but making it clear that the intercourse was consensual because she had intercourse with someone. She claims that he raped her, and then the following evening she invited him to a party at her place and boasted to the world about a conquest and how cool he was. It's most unlikely that somebody who was raped would do something like that. And I note that the leading feminists are coming out saying, well, they don't believe it either. So I'm very suspicious about this. Ms. Arden, of course, has connections to the CIA, so I think she was a honey trap, basically.
And, of course, it wouldn't stand up too well in court, would it? I mean, with that sort of evidence. I mean, would this be the first time, in your knowledge, that someone has been, I mean, aside from, say, terrorism offences, which we know have that special category where people can be detained. But, I mean, here we have a man detained based on allegations. I mean, I've never heard that. He's been locked up, you know, without bail because of allegations?
Oh, no. I mean,
does that ever happen?
I don't know. He hasn't actually been charged. People, yes, it happens under the Mental Health Act.
Right. Thank you for, pointing that out.
That's, you know, why the mentally ill have fewer rights than criminals. You are suspected of being mentally ill, therefore we are going to hold you up to a month and we're going to drag you up the yin-yang in the meantime. But we won't go there at the moment, will we?
No, not just yet, yeah. But, okay, so it's kind of, it's a bit precedent-setting in a way that they're extending this. And of course, there has been a parallel here. I know that in Australia we have some very specific laws which I think are undemocratic in relation to the HIV questions because people have actually been sent to prison for having fully consensual sex while HIV positive.
Yeah, I think something just needs to be mentioned here, Herald. I mean, Mr. Assange is in prison. He's being detained because there's an application to extradite him.
And that's it. That's the basis in law.
Well, yeah, they want to extradite him so that they can question him in relation to these allegations, but they really don't need to extradite him. They could question him in Britain.
Right.
I mean, the extradition is just being done because people want to ship him off to the US, and I understand that there's a process in motion to actually indict him under the Espionage Act. I'm really quite astonished about this whole thing, but apparently there's a bill going through the House in the US, as I mentioned, and apparently this bill aims at making Mr. Assange's actions a criminal offence retrospectively.
Yeah,
extraterritorially and everything else. It's just extraordinary. One thing in relation to this is if the US Supreme Court's decision in the New York Times case doesn't come to his rescue, and we've seen some pretty political people appointed to the US Supreme Court, people who are inclined to take the view that the Constitution could be torn up if people didn't like it, and all the rest, we're seeing quite a bit of this. And, you know, the Bill of Rights means nothing and the First Amendment doesn't matter. I mean, you can say anything you like as long as we don't object to it. But if this happens and they do decide that Mr. Assange has committed a criminal offence, it's an extraterritorial thing. I'll tell you what it's like. It's like me saying to you, Herald, you're a criminal because you went to the pub last night and consumed alcohol, and you can be publicly flogged for that.
Right.
And also, and you say to me, well, no, it's not an offence to consume alcohol. So, but it is in Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So you should be deported to Saudi Arabia to answer for consuming alcohol in Sydney. I mean, that's how stupid it is. You get some idea of the extraterritorial nature of the thing?
Yeah, I mean, there are just so many different draconian laws that are being proposed. Some of them have already been on the floor of the House. Some of them are poised to go through. I mean, some of them, of course, date back prior to all this. I mean, the cybersecurity bill, and I've just got some information here. The Cybersecurity Act was associated with reports that it would give the president a kill switch to shut down the internet.
Oh,
although the technical details of exactly how a single switch could shut down the internet were not specified. Giving government, especially the president, unprecedented control over America's trunk line of information, over electronic free speech and over business activities, invites suspicions about whether it would be used politically to frighten people at election time. And I think that the current crisis that they've kind of an artificial crisis, but you know, we've got the WikiLeaks documents causing all this discomfort. Then we've got the cyber attacks from the groups like Anonymous, who are trying to get revenge for what's been done, and they're doing denial of service attacks against Visa and MasterCard and Amazon and PayPal. And so I think in that climate, this type of bill is going to be given an extra boost, an extra plug. It's like the Patriot Act after 9/11, you know.
Yeah, well, but just one thing about the denial of service attacks. The script kiddies who launched the denial of service attacks and that Operation Payback weren't doing anything that the US government hadn't already done to WikiLeaks. They had launched a denial of service attack against WikiLeaks. So these people were just launching a noisy protest, and there's no point in people saying, well, you know, it wasn't effective as a cyber war. It wasn't intended to be a cyber war. It was just intended to be a protest, and it was a very effective protest.
And of course, Rochelle, I mean, the idea of shutting down the internet, is ridiculous, because that is probably the most extreme act of terrorism that you could do.
And of course, was designed to keep going during a nuclear war.
Yeah.
These people are dinosaurs. They don't really understand the internet. They think the internet is like a radio station or a television station. If you want to shut it up, what you do is you go in and you stop it broadcasting, and you close it down. So, right, we'll shut you down now. Now you can't broadcast. And that's it. But they don't forget that. You see, what they're forgetting is there isn't a single head to cut off with the internet. They keep seeing it as being a single head, and you just cut the head off and that stops it. I mean, they think that they can stop WikiLeaks under some stupid Republican, female Republican member was saying, well, you know, what we're going to do is we just shut the website down completely. Well, easier said than done, Mum. We do have some very, very good strategies that will help to defeat these tyrannical dinosaurs. And, you know, I would like to just say a few words about that, if that's okay.
Absolutely. I just like to quickly, I've got a video up here of Senator Lieberman speaking about Julian Assange. It's a short video.
Yeah.
And let's just have a listen to it. And if you want to interject, just go right ahead and I'll pause the video. But I think this could be worth, and also for our listeners to get that, you know, that side of it. So I'll just roll that now.
Anderson Cooper, AC360, CNN Weeknights 10 Eastern.
I want to ask you about WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Do you believe there should be an investigation into whether the New York Times broke any laws but by reporting on the material that WikiLeaks had put out there?
This is a difficult question. I mean, to me, it's very clear that the Army private who was apparently the source of most of this material, classified material, now in a military brig and going to court-martial, he is accused of a crime. Julian Assange, it seems to me, by taking that material and disseminating through WikiLeaks, has violated the Espionage Act of the United States of America. I hope the Justice Department will soon indict him and that we will be able to extradite him from Britain and bring him back to stand trial in the United States.
I'll just pause it there briefly. Rochelle, is there any case that he has violated the Espionage Act as it currently stands?
No, he hasn't. This is quite clear. You see, none of this was carried out on U.S. soil.
Right.
Wayne Madsen said it's a very good thing that there's no offensive idiocy in the United States, because if there were, he said Senator Lieberman would be doing 30 years to life.
Right, right. Right, and this is what your point you made before, which is that he can't have violated the Espionage Act, A, because he's not American, B, because none of this occurred in America, and he can't be indicted under the US Espionage Act because he is not conducting espionage in any logical sense.
Well, he's not doing it in America anyway. I mean, these documents weren't published within America, but I mean, even if they were published within America, then one would think that he'd have the protection of the First Amendment, but also the US Supreme Court has ruled that it's not an offence to merely publish. So none of this publishing of documents was done on US soil. So Senator Lieberman is just...
And this is why they want to expand the Espionage Act. This is why they want to modify it to include this type of affair.
Well, I don't know how they're going to get away with the extraterritoriality thing. I mean, I think that's a very dangerous thing. You know, we might start seeing people extradited for committing acts of adultery in Sydney and sent off to countries where they can be stoned or decapitated if we have this kind of thing.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, just let me just continue with the video and then
sure.
We'll continue.
What to do about the New York Times and other news outlets that have accepted and distributed this stolen classified material is, of course, a more complicated question. I'm not calling for prosecution of the Times, but I think they're guilty of bad citizenship. As you know, Anderson, a lot of other news organizations, including CNN, did not accept this material, classified material, and disseminate it. And I think we've got to have a serious discussion about what the legal obligation of news organizations is in cases like this, where they know they're accepting and distributing stolen classified material.
Because they say
it's a serious question.
The Times says that they were very careful not to publish anything that would endanger U.S. security. Just so I'm clear, because I think in another interview you said there should be investigation. Are you saying that yes, there should be investigation at the Times?
No. Here's what I really said. I'm glad. I appreciate the opportunity you give me to clarify, because I think that's been misunderstood. I think that we all ought to do some serious thinking about what the obligation of credible, legitimate mainstream news organizations is in dealing with this kind of material. I mean, the only thing I'm prepared to say conclusively is that I think the New York Times is guilty of bad citizenship by accepting this material.
Absolutely, go ahead.
For a start, Senator Lieberman said stolen documents. I've made it perfectly clear that they were not stolen. They were simply copied. He says bad citizenship. Now, bad citizenship is not an offence. He seems to think that news organisations have an obligation to be toadies of the US government. They're supposed to be there to report independently.
Absolutely.
These documents have not released information that's endangered people. WikiLeaks have cooperated with other media organisations like Der Spiegel, and they've actually redacted names. My understanding is they contacted the US government and offered to redact information. The US government said, no, you go to hell, don't you publish any of those documents.
Right.
Well, it's not the role of the media to be toadies for the government. CNN may think that, but it's not there.
I mean, I'm just briefly, my reading of what we just heard there with Joe Lieberman is that, you know, his complaint is very weak. And he doesn't even seem to be very passionate about it. Like, I just, what I hear is a bit of a puff piece. It's like all blown up and, oh, yes, it's all terrible. And, gee, he committed a crime. Oh, hopefully we can throw him in prison, you know. But it's just. There's so little to this, you know. It's just that's the continuing feeling I get about everything surrounding the attacks or the so-called controversy over WikiLeaks.
They're without substance. They're certainly without legal substance. And the fact that they're continuing to push these attacks on him without legal substance just shows how stupid they are.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Rochelle, you were about to just go on to say what we can do in terms of strategy, or what the strategy should be in terms of how we can deal with the threat posed by the reaction to WikiLeaks.
Yeah. What needs to happen is that web pages need to be hosted offshore, where neither the US government nor their allies can get at them. I mean, that's very, very important. If you're going to host a web page and it's going to attack the government, make sure the government can't shut it down, because it's about time people realised a lot of politicians hate free speech. And what this whole attack on WikiLeaks shows is that the US government hates democracy and they hate freedom of speech.
Right.
That's what Noam Chomsky's basically said about the whole thing. And they've done a complete about face. But what we need to do is we really do need to go to our politicians and we need to say, look, if you censor the internet, I will vote you out. Not sort of I will vote your party out, but I will vote you out. We need to not riot. We don't need to riot in the street, but what we need to do is take some time. If we want to be effective, if necessary, take time off work, get dressed up so we look poof. We've got to make an appointment to go into their office. We've got to see them. Even if we can't see the politician, if we see one of their sidekicks, that's fine. We go and see them and we say to them, if you vote for internet censorship, I will vote you out of office. And what we have to do, if they say, well, no, we're against the internet being unregulated, we want it to be regulated the same way as the other media is regulated, we want all kinds of things stopped, and they come out with the sort of argument Stephen Conroy came out with, then we're just going to have to organise people in our electorate and hold public meetings. We're going to have to tell people what's going on. And it's going to have to be explained to people in no uncertain terms why censoring the internet is a very dangerous, or attempting to censor the internet is a very dangerous thing to do. You see, politicians hate freedom of information. They maintain power through secrecy. That's how they control people. And before the internet, they could control what people found out about. I mean, they could do things that were illegal and things that were shocking and things that were immoral, but people wouldn't find out about them until after the event. But now people are finding out about them while they're still in the pipeline.
Right, right.
And that's precisely what politicians don't want people to know. They can only maintain power if they can control the flow of information. And this is why the internet is such an amazing thing. It's the equivalent of the unified field in physics, in the relative.
Now, it's a common theme of this show that we've said that the dangers of granting government excessive power for the purpose of protecting us are greater than the dangers posed by those entities or agencies that they are supposedly protecting us against.
Oh, yes, the ever-present threat of terrorists. Yes, they're lurking under every bush and all the rest. Yes, I think I'd rather have terrorists than you know, the police state. I mean, my father went to war. He was in the British Army.
Yeah.
And he was in a Highland regiment, and he was on leave, I think, in London, and everybody else in the regiment got killed because the Scots liked to fight with a bayonet, you know. And anyway, he came back, and he joined the British Navy. And my father went to war, and he saw all kinds of dreadful things. And he came back, and he was very much a changed man, very much an embittered man, and he came back with a drinking problem. And he gave 5 years of his life to stop fascism.
Right.
And my father was a very sincere man. He was due to start London School of Economics, and he said, no, I'm going off to fight the fascism. And I didn't know at this stage, but my father's mother was Jewish.
Right.
And anyway, so my father was Jewish, but my father went off and fought. And I think that really men of his generation have been let down because they spent all this time fighting against fascism, and now we've got people who are hell-bent on giving it to us via the back door.
Yeah, because the principles are so important. You know,
yes.
It's the principles that were fought for over 1,000 years, you know, starting with things like habeas corpus.
That's right.
And you know, I often have conversations about this with people just to see where they're at with it. A lot of people seem to have almost all but forgotten that these things are really essential, that they're not just nice-to-haves. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's become quite common. I mean, I had a conversation about, I think it was about Julian Assange, and someone said, he's probably done something bad, you know.
Yeah,
he's probably done something bad. So, you know, we don't know the full story. So, you know, we shouldn't sort of presume to know. He might have done something bad. That's why they've got him locked up. And what I try to say is, wait a minute, okay, he has not been charged with a crime, but he is in prison. And that, you know, maybe that's been made possible by some loopholes that they're exploiting, but it is totally against the spirit of that primary concept of habeas corpus. You cannot lock someone up without charging them and telling them what the charges are and presenting the evidence to them so they can respond to the charges. It's without that, there is no rule of law. Without that, there is no civilized society.
Yeah, well, it's... I mean, it is extradition proceedings, but I do take your point. And people forget that people have fought, died for these rights. But you see, I sometimes think there's too much fluoride in the water supply.
Because
people are very apathetic about these.
Well, as we know, fluoride does cause a lowering of
absolutely.
Intelligence, and it's been shown in studies.
An incredible amount of scientific evidence about this too.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway. I do take your point. People need to become more aware, but I think they are becoming more aware. Anyway, there's just something else I'd like to say.
Sure.
Like with domain names, like WikiLeaks, what we need to do is we need to have different domain names in different countries because, you know, if you have something like WikiLeaks.com.au, Senator Lieberman can't pull that.
Right.
And a domain name, sort of like, as you're probably aware, it's like a white pages telephone book listing.
Yeah.
And what the government does when they want to pull it is they just replace the IP address with their own. Mm. Well, you've got to have it listed, you know, the site sort of in lots of different places, so they can't do this. So this will frustrate them. And, you know, also another thing is, I mean, we know that the US government hates free speech. So if the contents of the website are hosted in the US, and what the government can do is they can force the host to turn off the site.
Yeah,
so
that's always a worry.
They can just sort of turn off the request for information or they can delete the content. I mean, they don't have to do that, but they can do it. So what we need to do is make sure that websites aren't hosted in the US.
It's an important
and then
point.
That way, or anywhere where the US can sort of put pressure on people to stop them.
But of course,
anyway.
the vast majority of English language websites are hosted in the US. The US has the most, you know, the best services, the cheapest services, reliable servers. My sites are hosted in the US because it's really the most stable choice, and stability is really important with a website. So it's actually a tough one, but I think we need to be thinking for the future as America starts to move towards collapse, because that is actually imminent as well. Now, look, I really want to move on to discuss other matters with you, but I'd like to just quickly refer to, because we were talking earlier about the specific measures that were being taken against WikiLeaks, and it just took me a while to get this up, but it's known as the Shield Bill, and this is what Joe Lieberman is trying to pass, and this is an article from the 3rd of December. In response to the most recent WikiLeaks release, three senators introduced legislation that would make it illegal to publish the names of military and intelligence informants. And now this would extend protections already in place for communications intelligence and cryptography to human intelligence informants. Now, Lieberman said the bill will hold people criminally accountable who endanger sources of information that are vital to protecting our national security interests. Now, this to me, if this does go through, this does violate that principle of, how many different principles does it violate? Certainly the sovereignty of nations, because this appears to also be transnational in its implications. Well, I don't actually see that written here, but...
And WikiLeaks hasn't done this, I might add, but anyway.
Right, right. So they're going to hold people criminally accountable who expose information that they deem, you know, it's okay, well, they're saying this is criminally liable. I mean, how does that differ really from the current situation?
You mean in that they're claiming they can legislate in respect of other nations?
Well, it doesn't actually say that here. I mean,
no,
honestly, it's a bit confusing.
I think that's the intention. Look, they just don't have the extraterritorial jurisdiction. I think
right.
we just have to come back to that. But I will say one thing. If they put Mr. Assange in Gitmo,
yeah.
you know, what he's done is he has released a whole lot of the rest of the documents in encrypted form, and there's 125-bit, my understanding is 125-bit encryption key. Now, they've been downloaded. People all over the world have them. If they throw him in Gitmo or they kill him, they do something, they send him off as a rendition, he will release that. Well, that key will be released. They probably think that he's so stupid that he's set it up so that only he can release it, but he's probably set it up so that if he doesn't call in a specified time, someone else will release it.
Right,
and
right.
They've got the guy completely wrong. You know, he is a martyr, and he will go the whole way.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. They think they can intimidate, bully, but, I mean, America thinks they're the international policemen and they can just tell the rest of the world what to do.
And of course, Rochelle, there's already been a new organisation has sprouted up called OpenLeaks.org, which is actually some disgruntled former members of WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I think that's healthy because I think... everything thrives, democracy thrives by competition, by free
right.
market competition, and this is a new area. And, of course, the technologies now that these people have developed are very powerful and because it allows, you know, encrypted, untraceable documents to be posted so that the sources are always protected. And, you know, that's a new type of, I guess you could call it a niche, you know, it's like it's a new industry.
I agree with you. It's a good thing. I don't always think competition is a good thing. I don't think, say, the corporate takeover of the world's water supplies is a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't think corporations owning water supply or the air we breathe or the land of the in the country or anything like that is a good thing. You know, like the corporate control of the state, fascism is a good thing.
Mm.
I think there should be gas water socialism. But
right, interesting
yes,
point.
I agree
yeah.
with you, basically.
Great.
Anyway.
Well, look, I'd like to move on. We're just going to have a quick break, and I want to get back to some questions about mental health in Australia.
All right.
We'll be right back with you.
Okay.
Here's a song by Jose Gonzalez. It's called The Nest.
Takes from the ground. By the thicket while assembling a nest. On the alert for any lingering threat. Building frantically without rest. Walls grew dense and blocked out the sun, caving in everyone. Darkness fell, wiped a once joyous tone. Then famished, like persistent eating. Thank you.
listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to Truth News. I have with me Rochelle McCready today, and we've been going through some world affairs in the first half of the show. And, of course, Rochelle's an expert in mental issues from a legal perspective and mental health. And we haven't had a chance to talk for a while about what's going on. We've spoken a bit about the chap who won the Australian of the Year award, Patrick, can you remind me of his name last time, Rochelle?
McGorry,
yes, yes. So we had a bit of a chat about that and, the early intervention program, which seemed like a great way to get drugs, increasingly into the community, which are known to have all kinds of very serious problems, side effects, and, to see this early intervention where people are being, kids are being prescribed drugs even when they're not even diagnosed as being mentally ill, just seemed like just absolutely abhorrent. Has there been any further developments in that? And just interested to know anything that I know you work in a lot of confidential areas that we can't discuss, but anything that you can discuss, we'd be eager to know about.
Well, I haven't been doing much in the mental health area for a while, Herewood, but I'm involved in a case at the moment. But I just don't know that I would, from the point of view of Legal Services Commission, necessarily call myself an expert in mental health. I mean, I do understand a fair amount about it. I've done a lot of practice, and having a science degree and understanding the philosophy of science and looking at these things, I've certainly had a lot of experience looking at matters and analysing their logic and finding flaws and so on. But I haven't actually been practicing in the area of sort of getting people out of psychiatric institutions for a while. So, I mean, I'll be speaking generally, but, there have been amendments to the Mental Health Act, and they were sort of, passed in the dead of night, so to speak, and one act went through that amended several acts, and it wasn't done with any public discussion. It was just, it just happened. And now people can be detained for up to a month before they appear before any independent arbiter. This is in New South Wales. I can't really speak for Australia as a whole with respect to legislation, because I don't know the legislation of other jurisdictions. Mental health is pretty much a state-by-state thing. But it's a very bad thing, this thing that's happened, detaining people without bringing them in front of an umpire. And also the magistrate's been removed from the equation, and we now have a tribunal member determining whether a person is mentally ill within the meaning of the act or not.
So that's now fully in force, is it? That's actually in practice now?
Yeah, it is. My understanding is that they've done away with the magistrate. So it's a real problem. It's very serious. We have a different standard of proof with mental health matters than we do with criminal matters. I mean, one's inclined to think that if one's going to lose their liberty, and I must clarify what I mean by losing their liberty. I mean, losing their liberty, people don't get locked up forever and a day the way they used to before the Chelmsford inquiry.
Yeah.
And before that piece of legislation. And people just forget they're there and they throw away the key and they're there for 30 years and they've done nothing and, they're not mad. That doesn't happen, but there's another way of enslaving people, and that is forcing them to take psychiatric drugs. And the standard of proof is not the criminal standard, where they must be proven mentally ill beyond reasonable doubt. They just have to be proven mentally ill beyond the balance of probabilities. And that means that it has to be more likely that they're mentally ill than not mentally ill.
Right.
Now, there is a huge problem here. There is absolutely no objective biological test to determine whether any of the conditions that psychiatrists diagnose or treat are actually present or absent. They talk about, they can't, with all the pseudoscientific stuff, like all chemical imbalances in the brain, but you actually can't test a person's brain biochemistry. You'd have to force a probe into their brain, and when you do that, you're inducing brain damage. And so the biochemical picture you'd be getting through doing that would, you wouldn't be able to say how much was attributable to the trauma of forcing in the probe. Do you see what I mean?
It's, yeah.
You'd have no idea what it was like. The other thing is, of course, they don't have a model for normal brain biochemistry. I mean, talking about brain biochemistry is just ridiculous. Also, I mean, psychiatry isn't evidence-based medicine. It's not a proper branch of medicine. I mean, what they do is they just look at behaviour, presume that it's caused by an underlying illness, and then label it.
What do you think about that term biochemical imbalance? I mean, you must have heard that
rubbish.
A lot in your work.
Well, it's just rubbish.
Right.
They see these illnesses and they assume they're attributable to biochemical imbalance, but they haven't been able to prove a biochemical imbalance because you can't. It's a completely untestable hypothesis. You can't prove a biochemical imbalance in the brain without inducing trauma. And they've admitted there's absolutely no biological test for this. So it's just bunk. But they presume the abnormal behaviour they see is attributable to some kind of underlying illness. But over 200 years, they've never been able to produce any aberrant neurons or anything else. They're always
right.
saying they've made a great breakthrough, but they always turn out to be complete rubbish. But the thing is that there is such a thing as psychosis. I've seen people completely irrational.
Yeah.
And I've seen them, seeing things that aren't there and all kinds of things. And, I mean, seeing things that aren't there isn't a psychosis, actually. It's 98% of the visual hallucinations were shown to be attributable to some sort of neurological ideation. That was a Hall and Popkin study in 1971. But psychiatrists still insist that all hallucinations are an indication of psychosis.
Right.
Auditory hallucinations are an indication of psychosis. I mean, people do behave irrationally. There's no question about it.
Mm.
But, you know, interestingly enough, in third world countries where they don't have the money to force people to take psychiatric drugs for the rest of their life, people recover. Most people just recover independently. What they do is they just send them to a monastery or an ashram or something like that. They do gardening for a while and they get over it in about a fortnight.
Mm.
But if you drug people, you lock in the psychosis. And, of course, these drugs have a withdrawal problem. I mean, they will produce the same dulling effect in sane and insane people alike. They
right.
just basically operate by sort of dulling the senses, dulling mental activity, slowing down the thought processes, making people less analytical.
Do you have any statistics on what percentage of people in prisons are on psychiatric medications?
No, I don't. I was doing some research actually earlier. I wanted to ascertain some statistics, and I phoned up appropriate government departments and
yeah.
explained that I was doing research, and I really got very little cooperation.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've heard that it's quite high, anecdotally. You know.
Oh well, one hears these things. Well,
yeah.
yes, and I mean, there is a condition called akathisia, and you know, some people will develop akathisia in response to these drugs. I think it's about 12% of the population. They have this cytochrome thing, P450, and they can't metabolise these drugs.
Yeah.
Some of the modern antipsychotics are very bad, and the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors are very bad. People become agitated, and they can become suicidal or homicidal, sometimes both.
Hmm.
And there's all kind of rubbish spoken about akathisia. People say, well, it's not. There's no akathisia unless the legs are actually moving. That's not true. I mean, people can just get akathisia with this sort of terrible sensation of inner restlessness. It torments the people to be put on these drugs. But, you know, people do violent things. In fact, in every one of those, just about every one of those school shootings, except the cases where the records have been sealed, people have either committed them under the influence of psychiatric drugs or when they've been withdrawing from them.
Hmm. And I think it's fair to say that with people who are you know suffering the withdrawal effects of psychiatric drugs or have been medicated for years and years and develop akathisia, that there is a biochemical imbalance that has been induced in them at that point. I mean, there's probably no other, I mean, that's a fair description, isn't it? Because they actually have become neurologically affected by the chemicals.
Well, I think you can probably say that in some cases, like, you know, I think you need empirical evidence for this. I'm very much a hard science person.
Yeah.
But, you know, they do go through withdrawal. It seems that they go through withdrawal. It's certainly going off these drugs, it's conceded that they go through withdrawal with a lot of the drugs. It's like people go through a withdrawal when they go off heroin when they're cold turkey. They're very, very dangerous. This is why I'm absolutely opposed to this early intervention thing. What is it, pre-psychosis? What do they call the syndrome?
Yeah, there was a pre-psychosis syndrome of some kind that they were referring to.
The criteria catch 51% of adolescents. You know, but by psychiatrists' admission, they say that no more than 3% of the population is psychotic, yet their criteria catch 51% of adolescents. So it's just statistically unsustainable. And these people have actually admitted that a lot of their cases will be false positives. So it's just not a good thing to do, to treat people when they are not psychotic. And the thing is, of course, these drugs can induce psychosis, and that is admitted. Quetiapine can induce psychosis, and that's in the manufacturer's own literature. I actually have a reference for it. And
right.
If you read some of the side effects of these drugs, and you read some of the symptoms of schizophrenia in DSM or ICD-10, you'll see that some of the side effects of the drugs are found in the indicia of psychosis.
Right.
So you really don't know whether the person was mad before they took the drugs or whether they become mad as a result and they had a misdiagnosed medical condition in the first place. So I'm very concerned. But, I mean, also the idea of using drugs as a prophylactic. It's like saying, well, all right, some people in the population may develop a sugar diabetes, so what we're going to do is we're going to force people to take insulin. Mm. And forcing people who don't have diabetes to take insulin is just going to make them sick.
Now, what do you say to the belief system that is quite prevalent, that depression, which is obviously, you know, the probably most prevalent form of mental disturbance, depression is basically a malfunction, you know, because I mean, there's, and I've read a lot of books on this, and I've, you know, I've done a lot of thinking on it, and I know broadly speaking, there's philosophically two kind of perspectives on this, and one is a mechanistic sort of perspective, and one is a perspective that basically encompasses the psyche and even the spirit and the soul as being, you know, essentially the person. And it appears to me that those who go down the track of basically more and more medication and mandating it and even, you know, prophylactic medication as the solution, when they call treatment,
yes,
have adopted a 100% mechanistic model of the human psyche. And of course, the word psyche, Greek, it does mean soul. It does have a spiritual meaning in its actual etymological meaning. But the people who are the hardcore behaviorist mechanistic empiricists have tried to remove the soul and the psyche and the spirit completely from human reality. That's my, you know, understanding of having read about this, but not from a scientific point of view so much.
Yeah, well, you're getting into metaphysics. I mean, there's also a branch of psychiatry that's quite rational. It's based on quantum mechanics. And a psychiatrist there, he is a psychiatrist, and he's doing a degree now in physics. And he said, well, some people just make bad life decisions. But that's not a mental illness. They just make a bad life decision. But Harewood, I mean, whether there's a mind and a brain, whether they're two separate things or whether they're one and the same, you know, we can argue for hours about this, but I think the thing is that depression's being overdiagnosed because, I mean, what was once called just being unhappy or down in the dumps or having a bad day is now labelled depression, and depression's become a fashion disease now.
Mm.
When you meet somebody and within 5 minutes they'll say, hello, my name's Mary and I suffer from depression.
Mm.
I'm afraid I come from a different generation where we're taught to tough things out. I have a very, very simple solution for life, and that is if you have a problem and you can do something about it, you do something straight away. If you spill milk on the floor, you clean it up straight away. Mm. You don't cry over it. And if you can't do something about a problem, then you really do have to move on. And there are all kinds of things in life that are very, very painful. I mean, losing somebody close to you, a member of his family dying, is an excruciatingly painful thing. It's a terrible thing. But grief is just part of the human condition. It's just part of being human.
Mm.
Then there's the thing that, you know, unrequited love is very, very painful.
Mm. Losing
one's job, being retrenched, is very painful.
Mm.
All these kinds of things happen to us, but it's just part of being human. Now, what you have to understand is that if there are some situations that can't be changed, if somebody close to you dies, there's nothing you can do about it. That doesn't mean you don't have a right to be upset, and it doesn't give callous individuals the right to tell you to stop being upset because it's not going to change things. But you must understand that the situation is unalterable. And the thing that I find is that people are encouraged to wallow in misery. You know, if somebody close to you dies, and I've been there, I've lost a few people, including a boyfriend from a drug overdose when I was an adolescent. And it was very difficult. He died from heroin, and I just simply couldn't talk to many people about it. But the thing is that there's nothing you can do except change your focus. And what one has to realise is that life is full of these things. I mean, it was said in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said it to Arjuna on the battlefield. He said, you know, these bodies are known to experience all sorts of things, heat, pleasure and pain and cold and so on. I'm paraphrasing now. He said, transient,
sure,
they come and go. He said, bear them patiently, O Bharata. That was Arjuna's name, and Bharata was one of the names. But these things will pass. There are things people can do. I mean, I've done transcendental meditation every morning and evening for over 30 years, and I've found it's been immensely helpful. One tends to look on problems as being more of a challenge than being overwhelmed by them. But somebody once talked to me about depression, and I said to him, well, he said he was seeing a shrink and he was seeing a psychologist, and I said, well, would you like some advice? He said, yes. And I said, what happened? He said, well, I got bullied at work, and he said, I've lost my job, and he said, I feel useless. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I think you should do. He said, yeah, tell me. And I said, take responsibility for your own life.
Mm.
I said, withdraw from your psychiatric drugs under medical supervision, because people shouldn't see them abruptly. And I said, don't continue to see your psychologist. And I said, learn meditation. I said, go and see a doctor and have a physical checkup. I mean, I see an Ayurvedic doctor as well as an ordinary doctor, but I found Ayurveda's been, Maharishi Ayurveda has been absolutely amazing. It's cured me of migraines, it's cured me of asthma, and I've gotten rid of a condition called osteogenesis imperfecta, which is allegedly genetic, but I no longer find my bones breaking easily, and the whites of my eyes are considerably less blue than what they used to be, so I'm quite impressed with it, and it's practiced by a doctor in Sydney.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have a lot of faith in that. I believe in evidence-based medicine, and he does too, and I mean, Ayurveda certainly stands the test, but these are things that you can do, and this guy took responsibility for his life, and I saw him a few weeks later, and he said, look, I'd really like to thank you, because he said, if I hadn't followed your advice, he said, I'd still be where I was. He said, I didn't learn transcendental meditation, I've learned this Buddhist meditation, but he said, I've found that self-discipline's been very good for me. He said, I'm getting up in the morning, and I'm taking responsibility, and he said, I really am a changed person. And I said, well, I'm glad. I'm glad that's happened. I talked to another bloke, and I said, look, he said he and his girlfriend had broken up, and he said, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, would you like me to tell you? And he said, yes. And I said, make a list of everything you have to do. Put the most important thing at the top and the least important thing at the bottom. And I said, work your way through the list. And I said, if you still feel bad by the time you get to the bottom of the list, I said, take 50 mils of castor oil on an empty stomach, and by the time you get over the effects of that, you will have forgotten about what's bothering you in the first place.
Yeah, it's making decisions, keeping yourself moving, keeping yourself, you know, having a direction, and also what you're saying is that the distraction factor, you know, we are largely, you know, victims of our own thoughts a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so true. Look, we're just about out of time, Rochelle. You provide a legal service. I just mention it to our listeners. Just can you just give us a few brief details about that?
Oh, well, look, I work for Oliveri Lawyers, and I must say that the opinions expressed during this program are my own. They shouldn't be in any way interpreted as being those of Oliveri Lawyers. But, I mean, I am a lawyer. I've been in practice for, I was admitted into the Supreme Court in 1988. In December 1988, I commenced practice in 1989 in criminal law. I've been a prosecutor. I've been a defence on, you know, both defence and prosecution. And if people wish to retain my services, then they should contact Oliveri Lawyers. Our first consultation is free. And if I don't know how to handle something, then, you know, somebody there will probably know how to handle it. If they can't, well, then we'll just tell you.
Great.
You better go elsewhere. But, you know, sometimes things are very highly specialised.
Yeah, that's great. Really interesting discussion today.
Thank you very much, Eric. It's been very, very good.
Yeah, I think it's been helpful. It's been, certainly been helpful for me. I hope it's been helpful for our audience. And I'm sure we'll know more about WikiLeaks very soon, because we're right on the edge there of some new changes and developments. But your thoughts have been greatly appreciated.
Okay.
Well,
thanks for having me on the show, Herod.
Have a great day. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, that about wraps up our show for today. Hope you enjoyed it. Please leave us some comments. Please visit our Twitter page, our Facebook page, and our website, and leave some comments. Over and out from Truth News Australia.